This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. Get involved with the debate by tweeting at Blue Moon Podcast and check out exclusive interviews on bluemoonpodcast.com. It's your club and this is your show.
The busy Christmas period is over and Manchester City have taken two comfortable victories in the last week as Pep Guardiola's team get the 2020s off to a winning start. But there's no rest for the wicked as the busy Christmas period becomes a busy January and the nitty-gritty of a game every 3 days gets underway. And for this week's Blue Moon Podcast, attention is turning to City's defence of the two domestic cups. First up, Port Vale visit the Etihad on Saturday before Guardiola will take his side to Old Trafford for the first leg of the doubleheader against United in the League Cup semi-finals. Also on today's show, we'll be looking at the emergence of Eric Garcia in the City defence, and I'm afraid we're not going to be able to avoid our old friend VAR. Rob Wilson's back with a look at City's 2014-15 season in a series of reviews of the decade, while we're taking a much closer look at Pep Guardiola's 100 Premier League wins as manager, as he's become the fastest boss ever to reach that landmark. A packed show on a busy week means we should get on with it. I'm David Mooney, and in the studio with me this week I've got two City fans in the shape of Paul Atherton.
Good evening, Mooney. You okay?
Not too bad, thank you. And making her Blue Moon Podcast debut, Katie Mullock.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Excellent, I'm very well, thank you. So, two good wins, Sheffield United and...
Happy New Year, Miz.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Happy New Year. Sorry, I forgot about that. A little behind the curtain peek, this isn't the first bit of the show we're recording, so it feels like, you know, we've been in the studio for about an hour now already.
You mean we mixed the show up?
We mixed the show up, I know. Can you believe that? So two good wins, Sheffield United and Everton. Katie, perhaps not the most entertaining of games, but City looked more solid than they have done recently.
Oh yeah, definitely. I felt like we looked, you know, we're back to being a bit more consistent because there's been a couple of obviously drops in form over the season. Even the last few weeks, like losing to United and then to Wolves. In between that, we had the win at Arsenal and against Leicester. So, you know, it's been a bit hit and miss this season. But no, I thought, you know, could have said the games are a little bit boring, but we got the win. That's the most important thing, really.
There was a kind of a tactical switch he did in the Sheffield United game. He went to a back three and dropped Rodri into the back three and went with wing backs. And then he did it for the whole of the Everton game. And it's been like a revelation.
Yeah, I don't know how he's not done it sooner. Rodri's been fantastic stepping into that role. He's just been giving us a little bit more security that we've needed really at the back. Because we've had, you know...
A bit leaky, to say the least.
He's obviously looked at it and just seen, you know, where... The channels in particular have been kind of getting hammered as well, I think, because the pace of Fernandinho and Otamendi hasn't been great. I think it's not a coincidence Cancelo had quite a good game at the weekend, I think. I think he just had a complete free role. And Mendy could forget about defending almost and just whip crosses in whenever he wanted to. So it has worked perfectly, really. And I think, yeah, so it's nice to see that he's actually looked at where we think we need to put people structurally. Come up with this obscure formation, and it has worked for two games now.
Do you not remember when Mancini did it, Paul? And I spent nearly a season on the podcast going, I love a back three. I love a good back three with wing backs. And everyone was going, oh, it doesn't, but it leaves you exposed in these sorts of places. And I'm finally, City have caught up with my forward thinking back in 2012.
Yeah. Well, you should consider management. I think with Mancini, it was a bit more kind of. Sort of a bit more. I mean, structured. Whereas
he did have Kolarov and Mike on though.
Yeah, true. That's a good point. Yeah, he had. But, so you just had to give them complete license just to play up front, basically.
Yeah. What have you made of Eric Garcia since he's come in?
I think he's been brilliant. Every time I watched him off the ball, and he just steps forward at the right time, plays the offside trap at the right time, and then he just reads the game. Like you could just the amount of passes he intercepted where you just saw it coming. It's just kind of. Can't believe how young he is with the amount of experience he's playing in, and it's a welcome sort of change from seeing Otamendi, who kind of single handedly lost us both Wolves games, for Eric Garcia to come in, who's not rash and doesn't make all these sort of challenges. He's a bit more of an experienced type, plays like an experienced sort of player.
Has he moved above Otamendi in the pecking order? Do you think, Katie?
I think so, yeah. Just because he's been really consistent every time he's played. So I think, you know, if he carries on, I do think he could find himself starting quite a lot for City. Don't get me wrong, I do like Otamendi. I think he's, you know, a good player and he's been good for us. But I just think he's made too many defensive mistakes this season, and I think, you know, Garcia has proven his worth, really.
There's been a few concerns about his height and his kind of physicality, but you look at how he's played in since he's come into the team, since he started two games, they must have gone now, surely.
Yeah, I don't really see a problem with his height. I think he's doing really well. You know, he's winning headers. You know, he's making some great tackles. He's timing the tackles well as well, so he's not, you know, giving stupid fouls away. And I think he looks really comfortable. There's no sign of him being nervous at all.
I mean, Cannavaro wasn't the biggest, was he? I know he's a physical player, but you know, you don't have to be tall to be centre half. Mascherano was playing for years for Pep at centre half. So I don't see it as an issue at all. I think it's just whether he's good enough, and, you know, winning the header isn't always the thing. And often what you do is you have a bigger defender to win the headers, don't you? Which Fernandinho isn't at the moment, but when Laporte comes back in, it'd be interesting to see how Garcia and Laporte play together.
Because, I mean, what do you think of Fernandinho's future when Laporte comes back in? He is back in training this week. He won't come back for a while, but
I think Fernandinho will still get the odd still play certain games. I can't. It's, you know, Laporte's not going to come back and play every game to the end of the season, I don't think, when he comes back. I think he'll still be kind of like transitioned in a little bit, especially with how serious the injury was.
Is Garcia likely to get less game time with that?
I'm not sure. I think it depends a lot on where we sit in the league, really, and in terms of what we've got to play for. I mean, you've seen this season that Rodri's been a mainstay in centre mid, other than this new formation, because I think he wants to persist with it in case Fernandinho does move on at the end of the season. I think he wants to, rather than have another transition year, I think he wants to be transitioning now. So I think if we're a bit off the pace with Liverpool, we can't chase him. I think he'll want to see how Garcia and Laporte play, or Laporte and Stones again, or Stones and Garcia would play together to know what he's actually got and what we need to go out and buy. So I think a lot of it depends on where we are in the league. And also, you know, you might see Fernandinho coming in the big games, though, just to, as a sort of an experienced hand, though, I feel.
Just alongside
Laporte. I do think, let's see if Garcia plays another few games to make sure that we do think he is certainly above Otamendi in the pecking order.
Yeah.
I think if that does prove to be the case, I can see him starting that Laporte partnership as soon as possible, really.
Well, unfortunately, we can't avoid the topic of VAR. Alan Bates, your time is now again to bring us another rubbish VAR jingle. Here it is. VAR. Told you they'd be rubbish.
He's doing the harmonies.
I think it's all his own work.
Is he doing his own?
Yeah, I think it's all his own harmonies. VAR time. It's been a major player, Katie, in this week's games, without having too much of an impact on the results, unless you kind of take that Sheffield United goal that, you know, was rightly ruled offside out of the equation.
Yeah, like, you know, I felt like Sheffield United were doing really well, and, you know, they got that goal and it was offside, so that's what VAR
hard lines
is for. We've had a lot of disallowed goals this season, so it's nice to see it actually happening against us for once. You know,
the one that the Sheffield United players and bench were unhappy about was City's opening goal, where the referee got in the way of the play. But the laws as they stand, VAR can't rule on that, because the game should only be stopped if the ball touches the referee. And yeah, he did impede the Sheffield United player. I don't think there's any City fan out there that would say he didn't impede the Sheffield United player. But the ball didn't touch him, so he can't stop the game for it.
No, I think it would have been harsh, to be honest, if they'd disallowed it. Because from the different angles we've seen it, it doesn't really touch him that much.
And, well, the ball doesn't touch him at all.
And he's just, like, stood in front of the defender. So, no, I think it would have been harsh if he'd disallowed it. And I feel like if that goal would have been the other way around and it would have been Sheffield United, then we would have been angry about it.
We'd have been fuming, yeah.
Yeah, so I can see both sides, really.
Yeah, I think it's nothing to do with VAR, is it? It's just one of the things where, you know, if you're playing football, you're kind of like, you know, come on, ref, you've got him away or impeding in some way. But that's football. People are in the way. Things are going to happen. That's just bad luck. And it just so happened to sit on De Bruyne when Aguero has already peeled off the defender. I mean, you couldn't have kind of created a situation that was more beneficial for City. However, no, for me, that's something that VAR shouldn't be able to rule on.
Now, Paul, were you surprised on the game against Everton? We've been told all season that the decisions will be, the fans will be told, and it'll say like VAR checking possible offside or whatever.
Yeah.
But when the goal was disallowed against against Everton, the City opener, the still image was put up on the screen that showed the lines that showed that I think it was Cancelo was offside. Is that? Yeah. I mean, I've never seen that happen before. I don't think it's standard procedure. What do you make of that?
It gets rid of a bit of the confusion because the fans feel like they're part of it. I think it might lead to games being influenced potentially.
I certainly felt, as someone watching it, I certainly felt, they've trusted me to know what's going on. That's weird.
I mean, it's good that they tried it, I think.
I don't know how official it was.
Yeah. I mean, how did you feel at the time when it was being shown?
I was quite pleased to go, actually, he was offside. I knew, I'd seen the image, and there was no denying it, he was offside. So we go, okay, we go again.
I think part of the frustration with VAR is that lag time and confusion of not knowing what's happening. So at least if you can see the same images, then it makes sense. I mean, on BT Sport, they were behind, they thought it was a goal, and it was like, it wasn't that offside they were looking at. Sorry, this is for the Everton game.
They were looking at the
first phase of the offside, and then, you know, Steve McManaman missed it, and I thought that's pretty obvious. So, I mean, stuff like that, when it's offside, you don't mind, do you? That's something the linesman should have picked up. It's not like an armpit hair or something. That's just kind of the way, it's just clear offside.
Yeah, Katie, the decisions that I thought were weird not to have been VAR'd, or at least if they were not to be overturned, I was absolutely astounded that Phil Foden didn't get a penalty.
I don't know how he didn't get, but like, that is one of the most stonewall penalties you'll see all season. I don't know how he didn't get given. But the one that really annoyed me was the Calvert-Lewin tackle on Fernandinho. What was he doing? I don't know. That was a red card. I don't know how the refs give a yellow for that, or how it's not even been referred to VAR to look at it, really. I thought it was a joke.
The frustration with it is that if the referee had given a red card, it would automatically be checked by VAR, because red cards are automatically checked by VAR, but yellow cards aren't.
it's ridiculous, because it was a dangerous tackle. I don't know what he was doing. He wasn't even going for the ball. He was just looking at hurting someone. But if he'd have been sent off, it would have meant he misses the derby against Liverpool on Sunday.
In the cup.
Ah. So, you know,
swings and roundabouts, swings and roundabouts, really, yeah.
But it was a naughty tackle, and I suppose if a City player did that, he'd be called every name under the sun, left, right and centre.
Yeah. I mean, Paul, you watched the game on BT Sport, you say?
Yeah.
Was there any indication that those decisions were checked? Because we weren't told anything in the stadium.
Yeah, they did check that. It should have been a clear red card as far as I'm concerned. In terms of the penalty shout, they said, BT had the monitor and they said it wasn't a penalty, and then they showed it a like very quick highlight, and you think it looks like he gets the ball, but obviously the VAR specialist in the booth was looking at it. They didn't stop the play, did they? They just carried on. They would have had all sorts of angles, and you can clearly see they didn't touch the ball. So it's this inconsistency. If you can have this power, you need to implement it in the right way.
I'm just a little bit interested in what the procedure would be, because the ball didn't go out of play for 2 or 3 minutes afterwards. So, does the VAR then just check it while the game is going on and say to the referee, actually, you need to stop the game and go back to it?
I think so, yeah.
Or do they wait till it goes out and then the VAR starts checking it?
I think they were checking it as it was going on still, was my understanding. And then they just said, no, there's no goal.
No penalty. Because what brought me back to the other incident was the Mahrez potential penalty, there was an incorrect offside in the build-up. That VAR then ruled they might be able to give a penalty if it was a foul.
That was
because
like that.
The offside wasn't offside. But then it decided it wasn't a penalty. So we had to carry on with a free kick for offside that we knew wasn't offside.
They tried to claim it was handball, didn't they, as well?
I mean, my head at that moment was that, you know, that exploding head emoji. That's kind of how I felt at that time. I had no idea what was going on.
Just sometimes they don't even know what the rules are. They just make them up on the spot, to be honest with you. I've noticed, like, when I've been in the stadium before, because I sit in the family stand and I've got a season ticket there, and we, because I'm on the bottom tier, we actually can't see the screens. So whenever...
Oh, so you have no idea what's going on.
So the Spurs game in the Champions League, I didn't have a clue. It said VAR check in progress, because they don't actually tell you there's no voice or anything comes over the sound system that says VAR check in progress, like some grounds do have. I didn't have a clue what was going on because I can't see the screen.
That's funny because I can't hear the PA system from where I sit, but I can see the screens. So well, together we know what's going on.
Yeah, it's we used to have a screen around the other side, but when they did the south stand up, they never moved it back.
When they put the extension in, they didn't. Yeah.
So you can't, I never get to see goals or anything like that. I'm just... I have to wait till when I get home.
How it used to be, Katie, for everyone who used to go to Main Road. Moving away from VAR then, because we can't let it dominate yet another podcast this season. Claudio Bravo, Paul, a clean sheet and some good aerial work, I thought, against Sheffield United. Came for a few crosses, punched it quite well and dealt with it well in the box. A great early save against Everton. I think it was the fullback Coleman got in and he flicked it over the bar. But then it fell apart.
It did, and it was when he was just doing well. he overplayed it, and then he got a bit cocky.
The Cruyff turn was really good.
He tried playing a through ball from the 2 yard line, and then Richarlison read it. You know where he was going to pass it straight away. It's just stupid, isn't it? But
that hard work. I mean, he was slowly rebuilding the confidence that the fans were having in him again, and then that happens.
But I mean, as good as Edison is, and his distribution is obviously incredible, he does have the odd howler, such as sendings off, etc., and bad passes. So you've got to
Is it a symptom of how City play, though?
I think it is. I mean, Pep would want him to take that sort of risk, but perhaps execute it accurately. And that, I think that's what Pep's saying. Over the course of a season, it's not going to cost you. And for Everton, somehow it didn't cost us because we held on. So if you want to play a style of play, if he made that pass, there's about three or four Everton players committed forward and that does start another attack. So I think that's one where Pep's just said, you know, you need to execute it better, don't get too overconfident, but you're doing exactly what I've told you to do. That's why Joe Hart was sold. So he's got a keeper that's going to take that risk and do it.
It does make the end of the game a bit more nervy than it needs to be, though. Because City were coasting by that stage.
It does, but generally speaking, how many sort of transitions, because he's all about transitions, isn't he, Pep, not counter-attacks. How many transitions have been started by Edison making a cutting-edge quick pass through the middle of the park to Fernandinho? And Fernandinho's had about 30 yards to progress the ball up, and all of a sudden we're kind of like in the final third. So, it does make it edgy, but... You know, that's what Pep wants and that's what's been working for us the last 3 years.
You kind of take the rough with the smooth. Katie, as much as Bravo is much maligned at City, we talked about the defence being shaky this season. I actually felt, that mistake aside, they look quite solid. Rodri's dropped in, Garcia's come in and been really confident in his position. And you've got two defensive midfielders and a centre-back and a rookie and your backup goalkeeper.
Rookie goalkeeper.
I was going to say rookie goalkeeper, but he's what, 36 in here?
Chile, 100 caps or whatever.
Yeah, I know. I misspoke and I almost got away with it if it wasn't for you.
I've never really been a fan of Bravo, to be honest. I don't think he's what we need.
Yeah.
Like when he joined us and he made that tackle against United and he
could have been sent off in his first game.
Like ever since then, he just makes stupid, unnecessary tackles, and I'm not a fan.
Not a fan. How about Gabriel Jesus? Fan of his, given that that he just keeps scoring against Everton.
Yeah, and I think he's really starting to come into his own now because he's getting more games. Obviously, I know Aguero's been missing for the last few weeks, so you know it's been a good opportunity for him to step into that position. And I think he's been brilliant. I think he looks a lot more confident on the ball. You know, he just seems to be getting in more space and making more of a nuisance of himself, really. And I think he's doing really well. Just think it's going to be one of them, though. When Aguero does come back, is he going
he's
to go back
again,
to the bench?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it would be nice to see them both to play together, but that's not how Pep runs things. So,
two great finishes, Paul. Could have had more in that game. I thought, in terms of someone who was leading the line, chasing down the opposition, getting himself, like making a nuisance of himself, as Katie said, getting the ball with his back to goal, holding it up, bringing other players in, and actually getting shots away. I think that's one of his best performances against Everton.
I think so. I think, and obviously, he's playing against a 6'5" defender as well, and he's still he was so strong against him. I think one of the underrated parts of his game is he does hold the ball up really well. I think he's built up a lot this year, but the way he brings players in is better than Aguero, like in my view. So yeah, I think that was probably his best game, but you could just see how hungry and desperate he is on his face. He's like obsessed with scoring. You can just tell he knows that he knows exactly what you're saying. Aguero's coming in the next game. He knows he needs to fill in and put in a good performance. But he's one of them that has been clearly worth the buy. Yeah, he's not become this like world class sort of star that we wanted, but I think he will do with games. So, and he played Aguero and Jesus together, didn't he, early in the season? So we don't know if that could be an option at some point.
Now then, Sheffield United became the 26th different team that Pep Guardiola has beaten in the Premier League, as the manager became the quickest head coach to 100 wins in the competition. And I've been looking at the numbers behind that remarkable run. It took Arsene Wenger 179 games to do it. Sir Alex Ferguson needed 162, and Jurgen Klopp 159. Jose Mourinho was quicker, but he still took 142 matches, while Pep Guardiola made it to a century of Premier League wins in just 134. The first was his opening match, a 2-1 victory over Sunderland in August 2016.
The speed was perfect. I said many times from the beginning of the season, I saw many, many good things about the team, about the spirit. That's why I'm so pleased, because we have to build something from that. That is the first step.
3 years and 3 months later, the manager has made it a century, with Sheffield United one of three teams on the list that have suffered only one defeat to his City side.
The team in the last 3-4 years was incredible. Football, you can lose and you can win, and we had a lot of injury important players in this season, but today was incredible, tough game for the fact the opening, for the fact we played less than 48 hours, especially 44 hours with 2 hours by bus after the game.
Aston Villa earlier this season are one of the others to lose their first and only match against Guardiola.
I'm not concerned about the table, I'm concerned all the time in the way we play it, and if we play in the level we play the second half, we can be there. Until the end of the season, I'm sure of that. If we play like we play in the first half, so we will be far away from the leading for the table.
In fact, of the three teams that Guardiola has only beaten once, Wolves are the only one he's faced a number of times. In their four Premier League games against him, they have two wins and a draw. Guardiola's only victory came at the Etihad after Willy Bolly was sent off.
The game against 11 against 11 was quite similar to 11 against 10. We make a fantastic first goal for the action, for the movement, for the pass, for the finishing, for everything. And after that, we forgot to look more the box. So we arrive in the final third quite easy, but after that, we didn't make a movement to attack the goal.
You can see how he's become the quickest manager to 100 Premier League wins, if that's his attitude after his side have just seen a game out 3-0. And while some teams have been hard for him to beat, others just haven't. Step forward Watford, West Ham and Bournemouth. For each of them, it's played 7, lost 7 in the Premier League to Guardiola's City. And in those 21 games, City have managed 71 goals. The standout was an 8-0 thumping of Watford earlier this year.
When you shoot the first 5 shoots on target, the 5 goals, what I like the most is the fact the second half, normally one after 5-0 in the half-time, the second half always is boring, is everyone do what they want, and we did completely the opposite, so we took seriously.
But Watford were also thumped 5-0 on the final day of Guardiola's first season.
From the beginning, see, they want to win, so it was in our hands, not depend Anfield happen or Emirates happen, so always the last game of the season when you play for something, it's always complicated. But we show many, many good things. We are so happy.
And Watford were thumped 6-0 when Guardiola went back to Vicarage Road next time.
We play really good, but of course the result is so important, but the way we played, I'm delighted, I'm so happy for the players, the way we played since the beginning we saw we were there.
That run also doesn't include the 6-0 thumping in the FA Cup final. It was a total of 29 goals against Watford in the Premier League. That's the most against any team that Guardiola has faced. West Ham, though, aren't far behind. They've let in 23 in Premier League defeats to Guardiola's City.
I cannot deny it. I'm so delighted for 0-5 and away, first game playing. We finished with 14 games in a row, winning last season in the Premier League. It's one more, 15 now in beaten, so it's good. It's good.
That was after the biggest of his wins against West Ham, 5-0 on the opening day of this season. But there were also a couple of 4-0s and a 4-1 at the London Stadium as well. Guardiola mentioned there that this match made it 15 Premier League wins on the bounce. His longest run is 18. That's from a 2-1 success at Bournemouth in August 2017, right the way up to a 1-0 win at Newcastle in December of that year. It was also the record for consecutive away wins in the Premier League as well.
Of course it's tough because it's the Premier League and everybody says the Premier League is so tough, the toughest one. So of course we are so happy to break it. Of course we know that we have one more, but... When we prepare the games, we don't mention, we don't speak about the records. We speak about what you have to do to win the games.
And win the games City have done. In Guardiola's 100 Premier League wins, they've scored 299 times, letting in just 49. The most common scoreline has been 3-1, with that happening 20 times in the 100, but there have been 18 2-1 wins as well. There were 52 clean sheets. Sergio Aguero has scored the bulk of the goals. He's scored 64 of them. And he's closely followed by Raheem Sterling on 48 and Gabriel Jesus on 32. And there's one stat that sums up just what an achievement this is for the City boss. Since he's arrived, Guardiola has won 30 more matches in the Premier League than Manchester United.
Hi, Colin Hendry. You're listening to the Blue Moon podcast.
For a pledge of $2 a month, you can hear our weekly bonus show on a wide range of City topics. There's more details on patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
A look there at Guardiola's 100 Premier League wins. Katie, when Guardiola took over, did you ever expect to see what you've seen in the last 2 years, even knowing how good Guardiola was as a coach?
Yeah, because I knew from seeing him at Barcelona and Bayern Munich that he can just make it work with whoever he's got. And you know, the players he's brought in, he's building a solid foundation that will obviously last for years after he's left City. I knew that getting him, we were going to have something special.
Was there ever any doubt, Paul, at the start, when his first season wasn't quite going to plan? Did you ever at any point think, oh God, City have broken him? Do you know what I mean?
I think I was a bit concerned at the start of his first season because of the fact that I felt like he was persisting with something that just wasn't working, but I think that was mainly because of the personnel we had. In previous podcasts at the end of the season before he joined, we knew how much investment there needed to be in the squad. Despite the fact it was such an expensive squad, there was a lot of players coming towards the end of the contracts that weren't quite performing, that needed to be changed. So I feel like he didn't have the players to do what he wanted to do in that first year, and that was kind of me saying, you know, he's got the goodwill of, you know, everything at Barcelona, at Bayern Munich, and the football he wants to play for him to do that, and kind of it did pay off.
Paid off late, quite spectacularly in the second season.
I mean, so I didn't have doubts because I knew we didn't have the strongest squad at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of how he's changed the game in England, Katie. I mean, I don't think I ever expected to see a team get 100 points, let alone then follow that up with a season where they were just too short of doing it again. Do you know what I mean? It's just insane, those numbers.
Yeah, it's crazy, absolutely crazy, and I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again, to be honest, in the Premier League. And you know, I can't really blame us for being a little bit tired this season, and you know, we've just smashed two seasons and done like absolutely amazing.
So missing, you know, key players as well.
Yeah. So you know, it's sometimes you just got to sit back and think, oh my God, like what we've done these last few years, and it's just amazing.
What's the best game?
It's got to be Liverpool last season when we beat them at home.
That's my pick as well. I just think that the way that City went into that game needing to win, and the way they controlled that game for everything but 10 minutes when Liverpool scored, they were just, it was an absolute show of control.
Yeah, and the atmosphere was just amazing in the stadium. It felt like, you know, like back in the day, it felt like, you know, the fans were back, were, you know, enjoying it, and it was great.
Yeah, Paul, he's going to leave at some point. Are you scared of what comes next? Because it surely can't be as good as it has been.
I think so. He said he wants to stay, though, doesn't he? So
get that contract in front of him.
I think so. Well, yeah. I think as long as he's enjoying it, I don't see where he would want to go. I mean, he could go to another league, but he's kind of done the main sort of big leagues. So
Italy, maybe.
Maybe, but as long as he's got a challenge, and I think the fact that we've not won the Champions League, I think that'll keep him here.
So you don't want City to win the Champions League? Just get that on record.
No, I want to keep him here, but I feel like with Pep, I feel like there'll be a good succession. I think the fact that Arteta's gone might ruin that, but I feel like there will be a succession. I think they'll have someone lined up. I think they'll know well in advance when that happens.
The one thing, I mean, in fairness to him, the one thing he has been is he's fairly clear about his intentions, isn't he? The key is that he tends to finish his contracts. So it's probably the end of next season at the very earliest.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, the other thing is, despite everything he achieved at Barcelona, I think he said the pressure in the media there was horrific. I don't think the media's too bad towards
Guardiola. He has said, in fairness, when he's had questions in press conferences about the pressure that he's under, he says, guys, you've not... It's nothing compared to what it was like at Barcelona. So that does kind of bode well, if you know what I mean. He certainly feels like he's enjoying life, if nothing else.
Yeah, well, yeah. Let's hope he stays then.
Now then, City play Port Vale in the FA Cup this weekend, and it's the first time the sides have met since October 1999 in the old Division 1, now the Championship. It's probably fair to say that things have changed quite a bit for both teams, so to help us get the lowdown on the current Port Vale side, we're now joined by Rob Fielding from the onevalefan.co.uk website. Rob, good evening, welcome to the show.
Good evening.
First off, currently 10th in League 2, how's this season going for you?
It's been a really good season for us so far. We've had a few sort of tumultuous seasons. We've had flirtations with going out of the league. We've had some pretty controversial owners. And we've got new owners in who came in the summer. They're Vale fans. They want to see the club progress and they want to stay with us long term. And I think we were just expecting stability this season, but we're actually looking at the upper side of the table rather than looking at the relegation spots. So we're quietly happy with what we're doing at the moment. And obviously, this tie is a massive bonus for us. It's a real glamour tie and something we didn't really expect.
Well, I was going to say, what does an FA Cup tie at the Etihad mean for Vale and the fans for this season?
I have to give you a little bit of a personal perspective here because it's my birthday on Sunday, and my birthday always comes around about FA Cup third round day. And as a team that's always been in the lower leagues, that's always the round where you can get the glamour tie. So this is a big weekend for myself. And I think I'm fairly typical of Vale fans and thinking, well, we've got nothing to lose here. We can walk away with quite a lot of money, which will help us next season. We could walk away with a massive shock that will get us all over the newspapers. Or we can just hopefully hold our heads and come away with it defeated, but with money in the bank.
Excellent. I mean, Katie, for City, it's been actually weirdly quite a while. I know everyone's talked about how good City's cup draws have been recently, but it's only last season where they felt quite good. It's been a while since City have actually played a League Two side. How do you think Guardiola's going to approach this one?
Well, I don't think he's going to play a weak team. I think he'll go in pretty strong, but I do think he'll bring in a couple of the younger lads, so like Garcia and Howard Bellis, just because I think, you know, they played well a few weeks ago when they played together. But I also think he will play some experienced players as well, so I do think Sterling will play because he didn't play much on... yesterday,
on
wasn't
New Year's
it?
Day, yeah.
Did I say Sunday then?
It's that time of year. We don't know what day it is. It's all right.
Yeah, so I think he'll play Sterling. Possibly might even get Aguero in because he's still coming back from fitness. And it would also be really nice to see Foden as well because he was brilliant yesterday.
Rob, when you hear names like that could play in an FA Cup tie, what's your immediate thought?
It's a bit worrying because our Christmas fixtures included shipping two goals to Macclesfield Town. So it's a little bit of a step up in quality of opposition for us, to be honest. I do think, I mean, the one thing I am quite interested about is, as I know your defence is pretty hit by injuries and doesn't have much experience in it. And we do boast one of the lower league's most experienced strikers in Tom Pope. And I do think that, yeah, we're worried about facing your forwards, but equally, I do think there's a goal threat there from the Vale. It probably isn't enough to win the game unless it's an absolute miracle, to be perfectly honest. But I do think that they'll get a rude awakening from the lower league target man type.
Well, Paul, I was going to say, I didn't want to throw straight to City's defence on this one, but the chances are Claudio Bravo is going to be in goal. You know, the defence has been hit by injuries this season. It looks, if you put them under a bit of pressure, then you can grab a goal. Does that make you nervous, even though like there's the three divisions between the sides?
I'm less nervous now because I feel like, because we control games, I think the amount of possession we'll have will create enough chances against Port Vale. And even if we make some defensive mistakes, I feel like we'll out... It's almost going back to the Kevin Keegan of we'll outscore you type mentality. So I'm not concerned. I think the defence was a little bit better against Everton recently.
Until
Bravo did a, you know, did a trick and then played it out to the opposition. So yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I'm not as concerned. But I agree, it'll be different for Fernandinho or whoever plays to have something different to sort of defend against.
Do you get nervous of upsets in general now? That because I mean, like, not necessarily for this weekend, but whenever City draw a lower league side, it is a story if City are knocked out of the FA Cup by a team in a division below, in two divisions below. So it would be a big scalp.
Yeah, I mean, obviously as well for form as well. If we play quite a strong team, and you know, the result doesn't go that way, that is a concern, but I'm not worrying about it because there's nothing to worry about at the moment. If we go down to 1-0 and 10 men, you know, within 20 minutes, then that I might have a different story. But
I was just about to say I'll clip that and save that for next week's show just in case, you know. Rob, it's quite an interesting time. Who have been Vale's standout players this season?
We've got quite an interesting side because we have got a decent youth team for our division. We've got a couple of youngsters in there who've come through locally, a couple of defenders. We've got a very attacking right back called James Gibbons, who really started the season on fire and very good going forward, perhaps not quite so good going in the defensive duties. And the manager, John Askey, who's come in from Macclesfield, has changed the formation. We've been a very, very dour team for a couple of seasons with not really much flair. And he's brought in a 4-3-3. We've got two pacey men alongside the target man. So I think if anybody's going to cause City an upset, it's going to be the likes of David Worrell, who's a wide player. He scored in our last game. He's full of energy, full of pace. He's probably odds on at the moment to be our player of the year. He's a typical lower league player and he lacks that sort of consistency that would see him go up a couple of divisions and play there. But, you know, on his day, he could beat anybody.
Do you go into these games kind of thinking, you know what, you know, never say never?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as I said, this weekend over the years has been my weekend, my birthday weekend. I've been to games. I've been to see us play West Ham in the 80s and we've got absolutely hammered 4-0. I've been to see us play the likes of Spurs. We beat Spurs when they were the FA Cup holders. If that might be a little bit of an omen for you there. And we beat Everton in 1996 when they were also the FA Cup holders. And there's another little omen for you. So we've got a decent record against FA Cup holders.
Oh, don't do this to us. Don't do this to us, Rob. Please don't. Now then, I'm gonna spring a little surprise on you all because Paul's pulling his face because he knows that I love a little quiz. So yeah, we're gonna have a quick quiz.
It's time for the City versus Port Vale surprise quiz.
The good news is for you two is that you can work together as a team on the City questions. But I suppose the good news for you, Rob, is that because it's about City against Port Vale. I reckon these two were probably about 7, 8 last time City played Port Vale. I'm just guessing. We're talking 99, 2000 or so.
Five.
Paul, any advance on 5?
8.
So my money's on you, Rob, basically is what I'm saying.
I was there at a game in 1991 when we played Man City. That shows how old I am.
I don't mean to do that to you, but you know, I suspect you might have a better chance than these two on these questions. As our guest, would you like to go first or second?
I'll go first, please.
Okay, so question one. Who was the last Port Vale player to score a winning goal against City?
A winning goal? I think that's probably Tony Naylor.
Close, but no cigar. You're thinking in March 1998.
Ian Bogie?
No, it was Gareth Ainsworth.
Ah.
Gareth Ainsworth, which I can't tell you anything about the goal, but I can tell you that I was probably at that game. you two guys, you can work together as a team. Question one, who was the last City player to score a winning goal over Port Vale?
So 99 was the last game.
99 was the last game.
Let's see.
Have a guess, because you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
Dickov.
Paul Dickov? No, do you want to go again? You're not going to get
Gota.
It.
Gota?
No, it wasn't Sean Gota.
Tony Vaughan?
Tony Vaughan? No, it wasn't him.
Paolo One Shot?
No, you're never going to get it. It was Danny Granville. Scored in a 2-1 win at Vale Park. Still 0-0. Rob, question two. Which former City and Port Vale goalkeeper was given an MBE in 2002 for services to young people?
That was Alex Williams, who I've seen play for the Vale.
It was indeed Alex Williams, who I think City and Port Vale were his only two clubs that he wasn't on loan to. So there's a goal, 1-0 to Rob. Question two for you two guys, and you might need to digest this one. It's a bit of a wordy one. Which City player thought he scored his first ever goal for the club on his league debut, which was away at Port Vale, in 1999, but it was given as an own goal? He then had to wait more than 2 years for his first.
2 years for his first goal for City?
Yes.
Against a different opposition?
Against any opposition.
Right, okay. So someone playing between 1999 and 2001.
Yes. I can say his first goal was in 2002.
Probably wasn't a striker then.
No, probably a defender, wasn't it? Can't even think. Should just go on a wild guess and hope for the best.
Yeah, I think so.
Have a guess if you want. What I can tell you is that Joe Royal was the manager for the Port Vale game, and Kevin Keegan was the manager for his first goal.
Right. Okay. I'm trying to think of Keegan era players.
I'm going to have to push you. Let's have a name. Ali Benarbia, no. Sean Wright Phillips, guys. Sean Wright Phillips.
God, it was that long ago.
That long, yes.
Oh, no.
So Rob, if you get this, you'll win. Who scored Port Vale's last goal at Main Road?
I think I'm going to go back to my previous answer. I think that was Tony Naylor.
I was close again, but it was Martin Foyle.
Oh.
That was a 2-1 defeat for Vale in October 1999. That was the last meeting between the sides. So you guys need this one to equalise. Don't let the side down, is all I'm going to say. Who scored City's last goal against Port Vale at Main Road? Children aren't going to get it, I don't think, Rob.
We're going to have to go Paul Dickoff.
You want to go Paul Dickoff?
Yeah.
Congratulations, guys. It's a 1-0 win for Rob because it was Ian Bishop.
Well done.
There you go. I think what we've discovered there is that football is the winner. Somehow, I don't know.
Check out exclusive City interviews on our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
Now then, Rob, before we let you go, I just want to get a quick score prediction for the game on Saturday.
Well, I thought you'd ask me this. I think the Vale are going to get a goal. Unfortunately, I'm not quite sure how many City are going to score. Hopefully less than double figures. So I'm going to go for a face-saving 3-1 win for City.
A 3-1 win for City. So we'll do that on our charity bet a bit later on. And we'll get back to you with what the odds were for that. But Rob, thank you very much for joining us on this week's show.
Thank you.
Rob Fielding from the onevalefan.co.uk website. Now, there's another game to look ahead to, the League Cup game at Old Trafford for City. After losing the derby a few weeks ago, Paul, how does this one take end? Does this one have any extra significance about it now?
Not really. It's a bit of an inconvenience, really, I think, drawing United. I mean, if you're playing once in a cup competition, it's not as bad, but the fact it's two legs is a bit more, you know, the fact it's two legs just makes it a bit more of a kind of badly timed sort of time fixture, really. I think it would be good to beat them, but it's not as if they're flying high and they've done really well since they beat City. It's not like that. I think they just pulled out a great performance against City when they needed to. So, no, really.
Does that fire City up, though, more for this game? Or is it the fact that it's a League Cup means that there'll be rotation so it doesn't quite have the same effect?
I think it'll be a bit diluted. I think everyone will still be nervous. It'll be a big game. Obviously, we're away as well for the first leg. So, and the players coming in, it could be their first derby for some of them. It could be it's a good opportunity for them to sort of prove it. It's still a big competition that we want to win. So I think it'll still have a bite to it, but I just don't think it's going to be quite as significant, I don't think, across the fan base. I think just because there's two legs.
It's a weird one, I think, this week, because in a strange way, we know, for instance, that Guardiola's going to rotate his team a little bit and he'll put a few players in here and there. But he hasn't actually got that many players to put in. The squad isn't actually as deep as people seem to think it is.
No, we've still got quite a few injuries. Like, obviously, Laporte's back in training, but he's not fully training with the squad now.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say he won't play in either of these two games.
No, I don't think he'll. I don't think he'll play him. We've just got to look ahead, really, and just, you know, make sure we play our best players. And I know it is a League Cup semi-final. And I know, like, you know, you sometimes play some of the younger kids, but I do think we need to go into this first game away, especially with a strong team.
It's weird how the tables have turned as well, because, I mean, think about you said in the Patreon show that you were at the Old Trafford derby for the League Cup semi-final in 2009-10. It's 10 years since that game had happened. And yet, I'm getting the impression most City fans aren't really that scared of the fact that it's a Manchester derby in this stage. And think how you were 10 years ago.
Well, I've seen us, like, how many times we've won at Old Trafford, like, quite a lot of times since that game. And yeah, I was there at the game, and it's my first time at Old Trafford. I'd never been, and it was heartbreaking, really, to lose it the way we did. But I just remember turning to this guy, who, this big beefy fella, started crying, and I literally went over to him and just put my arm around him and just said, right, you know, everything's going to be fine, we're going to win, you know, we'll win more, just, you know, keep going, really. And I always think about that every time we beat United, because I think, I wonder what he thinks now.
And I've got a hunch, you know, that City's record at Old Trafford against United is better than City's record at the Etihad against United in the last decade. I think they've done better away than they have at home.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think of the last time we lost at Old Trafford. Was it...
I think it was Pellegrini 4-2.
Yeah, it was. I think it was, yeah. Because the last few seasons we've won, or we've drawn, haven't we?
Yeah. I think Pep's won every time, though. Apart from, oh no, we lost in the League Cup actually a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and I was there. So that's I've got a ban on Old Trafford now.
Are you going this week?
No,
good.
I don't want to tempt fate.
Paul, are you as nervous for derbies these days?
No. I mean, the loss earlier in the season was a big sort of shock, and I think it was the quality of their play that was more of a shock. However, I just remember the dread of being up against Tevez, Ronaldo and Rooney. There was just kind of that air of invincibility that they had, didn't they? Obviously, they had Fergie, they had the referees on their side as well. Joking. they had everything on their side.
Wait till after Tuesday night you make that joke.
The sort of backing that, you know, the confidence that they've been here before, they've done this, and they're playing a team that hasn't done this, that's kind of gone away a little bit, I feel.
The thing is, though, Katie, from what we've seen this season, Solskjaer's United are comical at times, but they seem to do well against teams that are bigger than them. So that's quite dangerous for City, because it's undoubted who's the bigger side now.
Yeah, well, Liverpool dropped points. Their only game this season that they dropped points in was at Old Trafford, weren't it? And even watching that game, I thought United could have beaten them. It was only mess up in the last minute. Milano got in, but I don't know. I do feel like they do tend to turn up against the big boys. Didn't really so much yesterday against Arsenal. I thought Arsenal were the better team, but like I don't know. I feel like we are players. I wouldn't say disrespect United a little bit, but they look at them as if to say like we're better than you. And I just think we need to stop that and just
focus on it,
focus
on getting the
and
result.
Just get on with it, yeah.
I think 7 or 8 years ago, the dread was in the fact that they just unquestionably were a better team, and we'd have to be 100% on our day at the top of our game to beat them. Whereas now, our team just is better. There's kind of more pressure that comes with that, but there was more dread because of the fact that we knew they had these weapons and they were a better team than us. Whereas now, it's kind of. It's City that got the better team.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of as basic as that really.
Final question on the derby. Katie, the ticket allocation story, the fact that both clubs have agreed a reduced allocation for away fans without consulting, first off, the fans, because of the risk of, or they say it will reduce the risk of violence. How does that make you feel as a fan who goes to games?
I think it's quite disappointing, really, because, you know, in the cup you get more of an allocation, and like I've been to Old Trafford twice, and it's a great atmosphere with the away fans, and you know it's great to be here. But yeah, I think it's naughty, really, that they've not even considered us. But all they tend to care about is more money, and obviously they'll get more United fans in. But I'd read online that Viagogo had an absolute like load of tickets in bulk, so you could buy like 20 tickets in the United end in bulk. But like it was through the City official ticketing, and it's like, well, how has this happened?
Yeah, Paul, as someone who, I mean, you go to a fair few games, and you've been to Old Trafford, I think, as well, and in your supporting life, as someone who isn't necessarily first in line to get tickets when cup games like this come around. If there's a reduced allocation, you've got less chance of getting a ticket.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it just seems a bit strange to have agreed that without consulting both sets of fans, really. So, yeah, League Cup games often are a good chance for people that aren't regular season ticket holders to get chances to go to a game, particularly a derby. So it is a bit of a shame, really. But, you know, what can you do?
Well, we can moan about it on a podcast
trade,
do. Right, let's get some predictions on the board. And just like City on the pitch, we've found our form on the charity bet this week. First, Richard Burns won £80 for his correct 2-0 prediction for the Sheffield United game. And then I won £85 for correctly predicting a 2-1 win over Everton. And that takes the total raised for this season to £595. All the money is going to the Christie, a cancer hospital in Manchester, courtesy of our £10 correct score singles with William Hill. Two more games this week. Starting off with Port Vale. Paul, what have you gone for? For this one,
I'm going to say 3-0 to City.
3-0 to City is 11-1. So if you're right, it'll be £110. And for United, what are you having?
I'm going to say 2-1.
2-1, I assume, to City at this stage. Yep, is 7-1 and £70 if you're right. Katie, Port Vale, what are you having?
I think 4-1.
4-1,
yeah.
It's 10-1, so £100 if you're right. And for United?
I think it'll be tough, but I think we'll win 1-0.
1-0 win is 7-1, just like Paul, so £70. As we heard earlier on, Rob went for a 3-1 win for City against Port Vale, which is 12-1 and £120. And then for the United game, I've gone for a 1-1 draw in the first leg. I think rotation and pressure on the game, I think City will just about do enough to bring the result back to the Etihad and finish the job there. That's 11-2 and £55, if I'm right. You've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more on responsible gambling, check out begambleaware.org. Each month on the podcast, we're taking a look back at how we reacted on the show to each of City's last 10 seasons to reflect on the decade that's just been. This week, Rob Wilson is taking us back to Manuel Pellegrini's second season at the Etihad, 2014-15.
With the second Premier League title secured, Manchester City went into the 2014-15 season eager to avoid the mistakes they made when attempting to defend their first title. Their first step was to ensure the summer was a comfortable one, and on paper, it seemed that way. Club legend Micah Richards left after 12 years, while Jolyon Lescott, Gareth Barry and Kostel Pantilimon also moved on. Replacing them were Bakary Sagna, who arrived on a free transfer from Arsenal, Brazilian midfielder Fernando, French defender Eliaquim Mangala, goalkeeper Willy Caballero and former Chelsea midfielder Frank Lampard. City began the season with a heavy defeat in the Community Shield, losing 3-0 to Arsenal at Wembley. But normal service was resumed the following week, with new signing Fernando playing a crucial role in the 2-0 win over Newcastle. A confident 3-1 victory against Liverpool had City fans dreaming of another title, but they would come down to earth with a bump just 5 days later. A 1-0 home defeat to Stoke City felt like a shock at the time, and in the studio, Rob Pollard had nothing but admiration for the way the visitors had applied themselves.
They have come and done a bit of a number on us, and sometimes you have to not hold your hands up and accept it. That sounds submissive and defeatist and whatnot, but just say, you know what, they sort of stopped us playing a little bit.
City would then drop more points in their third home game of the season, this time against Chelsea. But new signing Frank Lampard would rescue a 1-1 draw in dramatic style against his former side.
It's a typical Frank Lampard goal, but it's come against Chelsea!
After a 1-0 win in the Manchester derby in November, City climbed back up to third following some inconsistent form in the league. Richard Burns was pleased with the way City wrestled back control against Louis van Gaal's Reds after struggling to do so in other games up to that point in the season.
I've said before that City have an issue at the moment wrestling momentum back in games once it starts to go against them. I still believe that's true. I don't think it was necessarily as much a problem against United, but it is. I think it's natural to expect that when you've got a one-goal lead, you are going to have to concede a bit of momentum at the end if you're against a half-decent team.
City had also endured a tough start to life in the Champions League in 2014. With no wins in their first four group games, Pellegrini's men faced off against Pep Guardiola's Bayern Munich once again. And just as they had in the previous season, City fought back from behind to take the points in dramatic style and keep their Champions League hopes alive.
Aguero has done it! A hat-trick for Sergio Aguero! Man
Manchester City saviour again!
The result meant a win away to Roma would be enough to see City qualify for the knockout stages for the second time in 2 years. Crucial goals from Samir Nasri and Pablo Zabaleta inspired the side to a 2-0 win they needed, and Richard Burns was eager to look forward.
The end goal of the group is to qualify from it, and they've done that, so we can forget the first four games now. They weren't particularly good, and we can't look back on them with rose-tinted glasses and suddenly pretend that they were brilliant. But we've achieved the end goal, and that has to give the team confidence. We've finally seen the performance from them in Rome that we've been waiting for 4 years to prove that they get the Champions League.
Qualifying for the knockout rounds couldn't stop City's title defence from faltering, however. With a chance to pull within a point of leaders Chelsea, the opportunity was squandered by a fight back from newly promoted Burnley. City gave up a 2-goal lead in the second half, and an impressive run which had seen them win 8 games on the bounce was ended. A month later, and City's journey in the FA Cup was over almost as quickly as it began. Championship side Middlesbrough shocked the defending Premier League champions with a 2-0 win. Sam Roscoe was concerned about City's lack of fight.
Look at when they went 1-0 down against Arsenal, when they went 1-0 down against Middlesbrough. There was no cutting edge to sort of get one back. There was no desire in that midfield, you know, to sort of spring into attack and stuff like that, to put the pressure on the opposition.
In the first few weeks of the new year, City's form only got worse. 4 consecutive away defeats to Liverpool, Burnley, Crystal Palace and Manchester United, as well as another Champions League exit to Barcelona, left many fans questioning whether the club had made adequate progress since 2013. The short answer for some was no.
Moyes had a better record in his last 15 games than Pellegrini has currently with his 15. But there's still something that says it's not guaranteed. I mean, I would be surprised now. If you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I was sort of the mind that he would be at City at the start of next season. I would be surprised now if he was, but not massively.
6 wins on the bounce in the final stretch of the season did see City finish second, 4 points ahead of Arsenal in third. Frank Lampard signed off from English football with a goal in a 2-0 win over Southampton on the final day, and Sergio Aguero did win the Golden Boot with 26 goals. Jonathan Smith sang the praises of City star men in the studio.
Looking at the recent Player of the Year votes, and I mean, certainly he should be in the Team of the Year. He didn't even get nominated for Player of the Year. And he's got to be very close to winning it, actually. It's strange that he has been overlooked.
Despite a positive end to the season, early exits in all 3 cup competitions and another limp defence of the Premier League title left many fans feeling disappointed. The reaction showed that the mentality had certainly changed, and Pellegrini's job was in question. But the end to the season, combined with the behind-the-scenes knowledge of City's future managerial moves, meant he would be given the chance to improve the following campaign.
And I'm sorry I left, but it was for the best, though it never felt right.
Hi, this is Nader Manuha, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
Rob Wilson there with a look at 2014-15. Now it's time to finish with Ask the Panel. Get your questions in for next week at Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter. You can email through the website, bluemoonpodcast.com. We're on Instagram as well, so go and search for Blue Moon Podcast on there and you can see some of our lovely selfies from the studio. Ben Aspinall on the emails asks, who in your opinion are City's biggest transfer mistakes, both in and out, over the past decade and why? For me, selling Dzeko was a mistake as he scored some big goals for us and was a natural finisher, something we missed when Aguero has been injured. And going the other way around would be signing Rodwell, nowhere near good enough for City and was a panic buy at the time. So biggest mistakes in and out, who are you going for?
But Mangala was...
I knew you'd go there straight away.
It was 35 million, was it? And I mean,
a bit more than great, that, I think. Yeah.
Was it?
Well, I think so. I can't remember the figure off the top of my head. But
well,
I think
35, 5 years ago was quite a lot, though, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I remember seeing the sort of the write-up, and it was a great ball-playing left-footed centre-half, and you think, that is not what we got in any way. Maybe a bit for the Chelsea debut, but otherwise, no. In terms of maybe Sancho, I'd like to have seen him have a bit of a longer go.
Couldn't keep hold of him, yeah.
Yeah. So, Mangala and...
Sancho. Katie, any names?
I've got to agree with in Dzeko, because you look back now and you think he was amazing. Like, you don't know what you've got till he's gone, really, because he was brilliant and he was there every time you needed him. And, you know, he scored the goal in the QPR game, you know, before Aguero. And, yeah, he was brilliant. But regret, I'd say Wilfried Bonny, because he was... terrible. It was great for Swansea, but I don't know what happened. It just fell apart when he came to us. And just...
I have to hold my hands up. At the time, I was writing opinion columns for ESPN, and I remember being really bolshy on that one. And when they signed him in the January window and said... at the time, they were quite neck and neck with Chelsea that season, and they ended up finishing about 10, 15 points off them. But I said, the signing of Wilfred Bonny is the one that tips it over the line in City's favour for this title race this season. And lo and behold, I think that was possibly my worst opinion of the last 10 years.
Yeah, I don't know why we signed him, to be honest.
It was similar to the Benjani buy, like a panic buy. When it's January and you think, we needed a little bit more here, so we'll get a player that scored 8 or more goals at this point in the season. That's literally what it is. It's just feeling like you need to do a bit more.
I always felt like Bonny should have worked at City, it just didn't.
Well, it's weird because he couldn't do the basics, but then he could pull out like something amazing, and that was it was completely inconsistent. Dzeko, on the other hand, I think he probably wanted to move on as much as anything else because he wanted a bit more game time and he wanted to be kind of the first name on the team sheet. But Dzeko was an interesting one because his first touch could go 10 yards or it could be perfect. He was just kind of a bit... But
would score those sort of heavy goals.
I think the sale of Dzeko was probably wrong time, but he had to go somewhere. But the best part of that sale was the fact that he didn't go to another Premier League club, because if he went to Arsenal or to Chelsea or to Liverpool, then he would have scored about 20 a season. It's because they're teams that could actually cross it rather than just cutting it back all the time. So
that's the worry with Jesus. The rumour is that he's looking to move on because of the amount of game time he's getting. Obviously, he's behind Aguero, as we talked about earlier in the show. But if he were to turn up at another Premier League side, he could be the league's top scorer.
I can't see that, because what price would you sell him for? I think City wouldn't.
Well, I wouldn't sell him. So.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I mean, no one's going to pay the price that City want for him, because they'll go, well, the evidence is this, he's not playing enough. Whereas City will go, well, he's clearly our succession to Aguero. So, yeah.
About keeping him happy, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. You can't sell to opposition.
Right, well, that's it for this week's Blue Moon Podcast and the first one of 2020. Thank you very much for tuning in, and we hope we've been able to provide some light relief to those back-to-work blues after Christmas, if nothing else. If you've enjoyed the show, then please head over to iTunes and give it a rating and review, because it really does help other City fans find us. If you'd like to support the show, then we've got a Patreon page. Head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, and we do bonus shows each week. This week's is a look back at how City have changed in the last decade, and it's available for just $2 a month. You'll get 4 to 5 shows for that price each month, and you'll get access to every single other bonus show that we've ever done, so it's certainly worth the money. Special thanks to my guest this week, Paul Atherton.
Cheers, Moons.
And Katie Mullock.
Thanks.
And I'll be back next week to reflect on this week's cup matches. See you then. Take care.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.